Video from the end of October showed a large crowd of Islamic militants affiliated with the Shura Council of Youth of Islam in Libya, chanting their allegiance to the Islamic State and to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The new Islamic State wing in Derna calls itself the Barqa, a provincial division of the Islamic State, the name given to the eastern region of Libya when Islamic rule replaced the Roman Empire. Swell, huh? We have managed to spread the Islamic State. We created the environment for which it could take root. We provided the weapons. We provided the air cover and the bombings. We bombed Libya into the Stone Age. And what we got was the Islamic State. So, ever the brilliant ones, the United States is now bombing Iraq and Syria. And what do you think is going to be the result? You know, what do they say? The definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting a different result? Not going to happen.
But you don't expect a different result. Everything is proceeding according to plan, Master.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a case that can be made that says that the Obaminator and his predecessor, the Bushwhacker, were not, in fact, as stupid, as ignorant as they appear. They were not as incompetent as their actions would paint them. But instead, that they were deliberately weakening America by strengthening and arming and supporting Islam, and that they, as part of a new world order, see the fascist dictator nature of Islam, and therefore they're embracing it, they're arming it, they're equipping it, they're supporting it because it moves the world towards a one world dictatorship. That's your point.
Right. And because of their megalomania, they think they can ultimately control it in the long run, but oh, they may be mistaken.
Yeah, it's like the Saudi Arabians, who were the first to support and embrace and arm jihadist Muslims in Syria to force a proxy war on Shia Islam to thwart the increased presence and influence of Iran. And they did so until the monster that they had armed threatened to destroy them. And when it raised its fangs and was about to bite the Saudi royal family, they said, "Oh, wow, we created a monster." Well, actually, they didn't say we created a monster, but there's a monster over there. They say there's a monster in Iran. There's a monster fighting the Iranians. It's just that we created one of those two monsters.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
And indeed. Yeah, they thought they could control them.
I was going to make the point last week at one point about George W. Bush, that mm-hmm. sometimes he played to the buffoon image and would say things that were technically correct, but that people would think were mistaken and then mock him for it. Like at one point he made a comment about the internet, plural. And I was like, you said internet. Boy, what a dummy. Unfortunately, he's technically correct because
correct.
Anytime you use a bridge to connect two lands, you've created an internet. When you connect more of them, you end up... So technically, the internet, what we call the internet singular, is a networking of internets. And so it's like, oh...
And also, within the internet, there is a... First, the internet that we know today was created as a joint venture between UCLA was one of the schools involved. General Electric was one of the companies involved, and the U.S. Defense Department was involved. And they created a intranet between them to communicate. And right. that became the basis of the internet as we know it, but there are still private networks. And so right. there are many networks, so it is a an internet of networks, plural. And there are lots of private networks that have been part of the ability to communicate data. And there's lots of different companies that provide backbone. So yeah, there are intranets. Yeah, but I don't for a moment confuse George W. Bush with a smart man. I've met him. I've spent considerable time with him. He is not a smart man. The things that should never be confused with George W. Bush is evangelical Christians thought he was one of theirs. Not.
Right.
That he was a conservative. No, he was not. He's the one that actually took a $275 billion federal surplus and turned it into a $1.5 trillion deficit. He was not a conservative.
Yeah. Number three, was stolen from the Social Security trust fund.
Number three, that he had some acumen in business. Now he was a complete failure in business. That he was truthful in his assessment of the world and was truthful in his justification for invading Iraq and Afghanistan. He was not. George W. Bush was a complete fraud, completely disingenuous, and if it had not been for Obama, you could make a case that George W. Bush was the most disastrous president in American history. That is no longer a credible case because Obama has been worse in virtually every criteria.
Yeah, I'm wondering, so certainly we look at all the hundreds of thousands of dollars groups are willing to pay to have George W. speak at their institutions just like Clinton, you know?
You know, it's why people spend billions of dollars running for president. It's, it's a job that pays, $400,000 a year. So they spend the billions to run for president because of the rewards when they leave. I mean, the first speaking engagement that the bushwhacker did was for the sods. He got paid $25 million. It was a bribe paid in the form of a speech.
Right.
And there was nothing that the sods wanted to hear George W. Bush say publicly. It was simply a bribe legalized.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, and the poor Clintons, they only make hundreds of thousands. You know,
The Clintons claiming they were bankrupt, you know, because, well, neither one has really had an honest job. And they claim they left the White House bankrupt. And look at them. I mean, because of providing access to power and because of the things that they did in office for money, which were paid in arrears, they're now worth millions upon millions. That's the nature of politics. And the bribes have now come in such a way that there's no way to prosecute the politician, because rather than being paid $20 million while in office to do something that is inappropriate, they're now paid. They'll say, hey, you know, the moment that you're no longer president, we'll pay you the $20 million to give a speech. And so right. it's paid after the fact, covered up by a speech, but it's nothing more than the standard bribe.
I wonder if he'd sue if they reneged.
I know. Yeah, but, you know, if he did what they were willing to pay the $20 million for, there'd be no reason for them to renege. And they would lose credibility with the next politician they wanted to bribe. We're being played for fools by the politicians in America. Anyway, you know, you look at Libya, and the Islamic State now controls large swaths of territory. They're referring to themselves as the Islamic State. Judges and journalists and army officials have been targeted for assassination that don't swear their allegiance to the Islamic State.
Thousands of blacks have been slaughtered in southern Libya because of what we've done. Where are the protests for that? Nobody even knows about that.
Oh, of course, and it's been throughout Africa that Arab Muslims have been racist and killing African Muslims. Yeah, and even it doesn't matter if the Africans are Christians or animists or Muslims. Now, Islam is a very racist religion, and the particularly with Sunni Islam, the whole basis of Sunni Islam is that Muhammad's tribe, the Quraysh, would be empowered. And so it's the heartland of Arabia that is empowered, and they think that gives them the ability to murder Muslims if they're not Arabs, to rob them, to murder them, to rape them. You know, I mean, it's why I'm so upset with Reuters for presenting that story on Israel and not pointing out that, you know, Israel, for example, has this huge influx of African Muslims. And the reason is because African Muslims are hunted and killed by Arab Muslims in their own countries. They have no rights.
Right. Well, we can't expect even the slightest vestige of truth from the media. I mean, I've been listening to the trial of Darren Wilson. Now that Darren Wilson's on trial, I've been listening to his trial all morning. Tried in the media, of course, you know.
Yes,
people with poor command of the English language and almost no command of logic and almost no honesty whatsoever, you know.
As we look at the Darren Wilson thing, I think that he made mistakes in judgment. There was no reason that Michael Brown should have been killed in that circumstances. There were so many better options. And all along the way, Darren Wilson had better options than to reach for his gun. And it is part and parcel of the whole policing of America is that the first option is deadly force. And
yeah, but that's not
that ought not be the case.
He didn't just pull out his gun and execute him, which is the kind of things they're saying on the TV.
No, of course not.
No.
Based on the laws of the land as they stand, he did not commit a crime. I would change the laws so that there would be an accountability for making deadly force your first option. So, I'm not a fan of Wilson and certainly not of Brown. Welcome back to Shattering This. What we find is that 2 months ago, the Islamic State's leader, Ibrahim Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, helped orchestrate this takeover of Libya by dispatching one of his senior aides, Abu Nabil al-Anbari, an Iraqi Islamic State veteran who had spent time with Baghdadi in a U.S. detention facility in Iraq. Yeah, that's something that most Americans don't know. This fellow Baghdadi, who we are now, he most likely is the head of the Islamic State. He was an Islamic preacher, a Sunni preacher in Iraq. And he went from being a preacher to a jihadist following the American invasion. And as a jihadist, America hunted him down and incarcerated him. But we let him go. And now his fellow detainees are his most senior aides. We manufactured our enemy. Helped by Abu al-Bara al-Azdi, who is, by the way, a Saudi preacher who has become the Islamic State's top religious judge in Libya. A Saudi preacher. Now, you see the connections that are here? Al-Anbari's efforts have borne fruit. Last week, a new pan-Libyan group calling itself the Mujahideen of Libya declared allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, So there's another region of Libya. This one is just outside of Tripoli, the capital, who have devoted themselves to the Islamic State. As a matter of fact, three provinces, Barka, Tripoli, and Fezzan, in southwestern Libya, are all now declaring their loyalty to the Islamic State. Fezzan is an interesting place. The Shriners wear a fez. The fez is that red cap that they wear. The fez is red because the Muslims, within 100 years of Muhammad's death, raiding through northern Africa to rob it, to enslave it, to claim it as their own. They killed so many people in Fez that the streets ran red with blood, and they dipped their white headgear in the blood in the streets to show how ruthless they had become, to show their victory over the native peoples. And so the fez is red because of what the Mujahideen had done to the local population of Libya. The Islamic State leader, according to this article, responded by calling all supporters in Libya to join what he called the newest administrative region of the Islamic Caliphate. Isn't it wonderful what we created in Libya? This is 100% America's fault. 100%. Muammar Gaddafi would never have tolerated this. There would be no presence of the Islamic State in Libya should America not have gone to war against Gaddafi. Should America not have armed what we claimed were moderate Muslim freedom fighters in Libya. According to a senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, the Islamic State's new province in Libya could have some level of viability, at least in the short term, because the fighters are well positioned to fund themselves through human trafficking, through smuggling, and through other black market activities. Oh, yes, the stuff of pirates. It is so Islamic, so religious of them. Libyan fighters loyal to the Islamic State have expanded their presence westward along the coast, forming chapters in Al-Baida and Benghazi. Isn't that lovely? Where the Islamist umbrella group Ansar al-Sharia is dominant. In Sirte and al-Qums and even in Tripoli, according to this report. The Derna wing of the Islamic State in Libya is the prime suspect in a suicide bombing last week in Tobruk, a temporary home of Libya's internationally recognized parliament near the Egyptian border. One person was killed, 14 were mutilated. All in the name of Islam. We made this possible, the United States. When are we going to accept responsibility? In addition to a host of suicide bombings throughout Libya and places like Benghazi, the Islamic State, on its Twitter account, suggested that the Tripoli wing was responsible for a car bomb attack outside the Egyptian and UAE embassies in the capital. In its audio message last week, the Mujahideen of Libya threatened the secularists and the parliamentarians and their pillars from the police, army, and it goes on and on. We have prepared for you from the most bitter of cups and the worst of deaths. Well, welcome to the influence of Islam. The Islamist-leaning militias, Islamist-leaning, that's almost funny, militias from Misrata seized control of Tripoli during the summer, forcing the parliament to relocate. Yeah, we really broke Libya. They are suspected of shipping arms to the Islamic State fighters in the east of Libya. Bentelman, who is a think tank operative, says that the Libyan Air Force destroyed one of those shipments early in the month. CNN, however, was not able to verify that. The article says that there are other signs that more secular forces in Libya are beginning to strike back at the Islamic State. Libyan Air Force just bombed their positions in Derna last week. According to Bentelman, they struck five Islamic State positions. Yep, so what we now have is a civil war. Most of the local population in Derna is opposed to the takeover of the Islamic State. Now, how would you know that? We have no one there to take poll. But with complete absence of any central government presence, because we bombed it into oblivion, they're not in a position to do much in opposition, should they even be in opposition. Local tribes are reluctant to move against them because people have relatives who have joined their ranks. Ah, yes, again. Welcome to the world of Islam. Egypt, which has strongly backed the anti-Islamist coalition in Tobruk, has grown increasingly concerned about the Islamic State presence in eastern Libya, which, of course, borders along western Egypt. In July, gunmen suspected of being part of the Ansar Biyat al-Maqdis, an Egyptian jihadist group, attacked an Egyptian desert border post, killing 21 soldiers. Ansar Biyat al-Maqdis has also pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. Boy, have we ever created a mess. Speaking of the problems associated with Islam and its treatment in America, starting next year, according to CNN, the names of religious holidays like Christmas and Yom Kippur will no longer appear on school calendars in Montgomery County, Maryland. Why? Because Muslims complained. Instead of Christmas break, students will have winter break. And when Yom Kippur rolls around, the calendar will simply state that there will be no school. This new calendar won't affect the days the students have off. They will still be out of class for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Christmas, and Easter weekends. It just means that the religious holidays won't appear on the school calendars. Why? Because the Board of Education was approached by Muslims who said, "We want Ramadan on the school calendar," pointing out that the schools are secular, therefore they really ought not be endorsing any religion. But the issue was, in fact, here's the statement, the decision was arrived amid a push from leaders in the Muslim community to see the Islamic holidays, such as Eid al-Adha, get the same treatment from the McCowney-Cumberland schools as Christian and Jewish observances. Though the students who need to be absent because of religious reasons do receive excuses, the Muslim leaders have argued that it's unequal treatment. So what do you think happens in Egypt? What do you think happens in Pakistan? What do you think happens in Saudi Arabia? Do you think there are Christian and Jewish holidays listed on the Saudi Arabian calendar? Do you think that in any majority Islamic country that they do what they're demanding in America? Pure hypocrisy. It's the point I was making earlier. We will demand that we get privileges in America that we do not give when we're in control. This statement reads, and it's a quote, "Currently, the thousands of Muslim staff and students within Montgomery County Public Schools have chosen between their education and observing their religious practices," said a statement on the website for Equality for Ed Coalition, which has been advocating for Montgomery County to close school on Muslim holidays. Well, what do you think about that, Larry? Do you think we should close school on Muslim holidays?
No, I don't. I'm at the point here where I think that people must be, I don't know, semi-retarded, and the people I mean are these school boards. I'm blown away.
I am too.
I don't think that there should be schools closed for any religious holiday.
Correct. For any religious holiday, I would agree. And to afford going over backwards
for Islamic holidays, I can assure you, you asked the question about if you were in Saudi Arabia and there was Christian holidays, would they close the school? That's an unequivocal no.
No, of course not. But, you know, while we agree that that schools should not be closed for any religious holiday, Christmas, Easter, Rosh Hashanah, you name it, that no religious holiday should be afforded a school closure. Now, I would tell you that if, as a member of the covenant, my child is not going to school on Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, and they're not going to school on Teruah nor Yom Kippurim. They're going to take those days off. But they're going to take those days off not because the politicians give it to them, not because the school board gives it to them, but because they're responding to Yahweh's invitation. They'll take them off, but you know they'll make up the work. They'll do what they would have been required to do otherwise. But
should not be misconstrued with religious holidays, because they're
correct.
Not. They're celebrations, and they have nothing to do with religion at all.
Correct.
And it's getting to the point here where I'm wondering, what the hell's going on? I've seen plenty of people leave Islamic countries because they don't want to be around it.
Right.
I'm not going to let you get away with that argument about their celebrations not religious. They're not going to accept that. The definition of religion in civil society, secular society, involves if you believe in an invisible God, you believe in the existence of God.
Well, that's an ignorant definition.
It's not. It's the historical definition. I mean,
it's an ignorant definition. In no way will be affiliated with any kind of religion.
You're flying in the face of thousands of years of
history. Oh, really? Really? You know what my last name is? No, I'm going to square you away. You know what my last name is?
No.
It's Hendricks. I'm going to tell you that. Now ask me, what religion is Hendricks?
It's not. It has nothing to do with names. Okay? I mean, it has to do with whether or not...
You sound like a religious guy.
Just to break this up for a moment. It is true that the Rosh Hashanah is a religious holiday. It is true that Hanukkah is a religious holiday. It is true that Christmas and Easter are religious holidays. It's true that Ramadan is a religious holiday. These are dates that are established by a religion. Now, it is also true that Yom Kippur is celebrated by religious Jews. And so Yom Kippur, as it is celebrated as a day of affliction by religious Jews, is a religious holiday. And now, that being the case, it is also true that Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Yom Kippurim, and Sukkah are anti-religious. As they were described by Yahweh, they're anti-religious. They're relational. And so while there is a valid point to what Glenn is saying about the fact that some of these dates, anyway, would be religious holidays, from the author's and the inviter's perspective, they aren't. So, the fact of the matter is that my children and I would take Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim off from work, off from school, but not because the school district designated them as a religious holiday, because Yahweh invited us to do so. So, I'm going to go back with that said,
you're also not going to tell your, when they ask you why you're taking it off, you're going to say, I'm taking it off because I'm personal reasons or something like that. You're not going to say it's a religious, you're not saying I'm taking it off for religious reasons.
No, of course not. No. And it says, Larry Bean would make the exact same point. We will celebrate these invitations to meet with Yahweh. Knowing that by doing so, we're ostracizing ourselves from politics and religion. We're separating ourselves from politics and religion.
But there isn't a scholar anywhere in the world that's going to affirm your definition of religion in that sense. You've sort of redefined religion for your own purposes. And the rest of the world is not going to accept that definition of the word religion. I don't care.
And guess
what?
We don't give a crap. We just don't give a crap. Christianity is a religion. Judaism is a religion. Islam is a religion. They have their religious holidays. We want no part of them. God is not religious. Simple as that. Well, I think that stripping the religious names from the dates of a political institution, public schools are a political institution, was wise. I'm happy with that choice. I don't think that schools should be endorsing religious holidays. Now, that said, of this community, my guess is that somewhere between 60 and 80% of the population would identify with Christianity. And so having a reference to a Christian holiday in a community where 60 to 80% would identify with Christianity, you know, it's hard to argue against that, even though I'd prefer that it be spring break and fall break and not Christmas and Easter. I hate the idea of endorsing, having a political institution endorse a religious holiday. Now, there are some communities, particularly in the East, but even some out here in the West, although I'm not in the West right at the moment, that have a significant Jewish population. 40% of the Jewish population worldwide lives in America. So, you know, you probably have less than a tiny fraction of 1% of the Islamic population worldwide that lives in America, but 40% of the Jewish population of the world lives in America. So it's and there is also a relationship between Christianity and Judaism, religiously. There is none with Islam. There's no place in America outside of Detroit and a couple of communities in Florida that have a significant Muslim population. What the Muslims wanted to do is to gain credibility for their religion. So the Muslims were incensed by all of this. In fact, the Muslim coalition said by stripping the names Christmas, Easter, and Rosh Hashanah, they are alienating other communities now, and we're no closer to equality, said Saqib Ali, the co-chairman of the Islamic Federation. Yeah, what he wanted was legitimacy. That's what the Muslims wanted. They wanted credibility for a religion that has no credibility. It's a religion that has destroyed everything it's touched. A religion that promotes the antithesis of education. This is a religion that is opposed to education. It's a religion that should have absolutely no say and no influence on any educational institution because they're opposed to education. They're opposed to equal rights. Everything that Islam touches, it destroys. They just wanted credibility. They didn't get any. Now, as for a scholastic definition, why would anyone in their right mind care? No, scholars are those who know a lot about very few things and understand almost nothing. Most scholars are a product of socialist secular humanism. They are a product of political correctness. They've lost the ability to execute good judgment because they are the byproduct of America's educational establishment, which renders good judgment the ultimate sin. Being discriminating is a sin. And so when you're not discriminating, when you can't exercise good judgment, when you can't differentiate between right and wrong, good and bad, then you have absolutely no capacity whatsoever for understanding. So a scholar is someone who knows but does not understand. I would never claim to be a scholar. I despise the whole concept of scholarship as it is played out in the world today. Understanding is vastly superior to knowing. Now, knowing has merit. It has value. I'm not opposed to knowing. I'm just telling you that understanding is vastly more important. I never claimed to know more than others. But when it comes to the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms, when it comes to Yahweh's covenant, I believe that I understand what God is offering, what He is saying, better than most. And understanding always trumps knowing. And knowing is the entire venue of the scholar. We'll be back.